Okay, ready for the third case this morning, which is 20-4118 Coronado versus Olson. Mr. Sykes, you're first.
Thank you, Judge. May it please the court. My name is Robert Sykes. My co-counsel on this case is Chad McKay, and he's joining us via the internet. But we are honored to represent the cause of Fernando Coronado. The central issue before you today is, could a reasonable jury find facts differently than did the trial court? For example, could that reasonable jury find that the video, the 37-second video, shows that Fernando was non-threatening on the landing? Could it show that he was not attacking officers when he took two drunken steps toward them? Could a reasonable jury believe that the prior threats in the 4 hours of the standoff evolved no further to no further threat on the landing? Could a reasonable jury believe that the totality of the circumstances had changed when force was used? Could a reasonable jury believe that at the precise moment that those triggers were pulled on those tasers, that there was no further need, no need for severe force? Now, ironically, you have answered those questions in the past year. In Emmett versus Armstrong, a tasing case in September of 2020, Emmett was a drunk in Wyoming. He misbehaved. The police were called, and he kind of ran off, and then he was tackled and tased. You said the video footage arguably could support either Emmett's version of events or Officer Armstrong's version of events. However, because this matter is presented on a summary judgment by Officer Armstrong, we have to view the video in the light most favorable to Emmett. At trial, the fact finder will have to decide what to believe. At summary judgment, however, we are required to believe Emmett if the record supports him. And so summary judgment granted by the trial court was reversed.
And what, Mr. Sykes, counsel,
yes.
What exactly were Emmett's version of the facts in that case?
Okay, that's a good question. And it's a very good case, by the way. Emmett says, yeah, I did run off, but I was tackled and any threat had ended. I was on the ground. I was laughing, you know. And then I was tased.
And that's distinct, isn't it, from this case where we don't have the defendant on the ground or arguing that he was on the ground or arguing that he had been subdued by the officers or anything like that, do we?
Well, Your Honor, there's no case that's exactly the same.
I understand.
I think it's very comparable, very comparable. Instead of
why is it comparable?
Well, because instead of being on the ground, Fernando makes a lot of threats. By the way, there's no hostage. No one was injured. There's no rifle sticking out the window. He comes out essentially naked. He's got cutoffs on and that's it. No socks, no shoes, no shirt, you know. And so at that point in time, the threat, the circumstances had evolved, had changed. And so the threat posed by someone who's been threatening, you know, has now changed. They've evolved. And you have said, this court has said that that officers need, are required to evaluate changed circumstances. And so to me, as we look at this, Fernando coming out on that landing, okay, is the equivalent to Emmett no longer being a threat. I mean, he's no threat. He's got a phone.
Let me ask him to toss the phone.
He tosses the phone to him. Yes, Your Honor.
Question here.
Yes.
He claimed he had the apartment loaded with some explosives. He came on the landing. I just want your reaction to kind of the other pieces of evidence, apparently, and that is he failed to comply with the commands of the officers to kneel down or lie down on the floor. They're on the fourth story, and then he makes basically a motion towards the officer that tased him. What's your take on whether those facts admit to an innocent understanding or could be seen as threatening by an officer? Just because he doesn't have a gun or a knife doesn't mean he doesn't pose a threat, does it?
Well, I think that's a great question because it emphasizes, okay, it emphasizes how a jury could view this. If you look at him, if you listen to the 4 hours of conversation, it's obvious he's very drunk. But he comes out and he's stumbling. By the way, his blood alcohol was 0.40 in the hospital. I mean, that's near death. That's how drunk he was. So he comes out. By the way, have you all seen the video? I hope you have. If you haven't seen it, please watch it before you decide. But you got a significantly obese individual, okay, who's stumbling around. And so the issue becomes, and the officers sneak up behind him, okay? That was part of their plan. They were going to surprise him. And he turns around and takes two stumbling steps. A jury, Your Honor, Judge Timkovich, could view that as simply a drunk stumbling around and not an attack, not a aggression on these officers. I think it could be viewed that way. And if a jury could view it both ways, as you said in Emmett, then it goes to the jury. And by the way, you also said in the last year that if a video could be viewed two ways, there's two issues. You construe it in light and in favor of the plaintiff, and it's a question of fact. You recall the Bond case that was handed down in December of 2020? And in that case, Dominic, there's a welfare call on him too. And he has a hammer. He picks up a hammer. And the officers crowd in on him so that anything he did could be viewed as aggression. Okay. And then they shot him. Okay. Now it's the same issue. And that one you said, I'm going to paraphrase, but you said, viewing that as aggression is one way you can look at it. Okay. But it's not the only way. You said, we are not convinced that it is the only way it can be viewed. A reasonable jury could find that plaintiff was assuming a defensive rather than an aggressive stand. I think, answer to your question, Judge, a reasonable jury could look at that and say, this isn't a man attacking these officers. This is just a drunk, stepping around and he's been surprised. And I think that's...
Isn't it the case that counsel, that it's not really just what a reasonable jury could, how it could view this evidence itself. It's how the jury would view whether a reasonable officer could view the evidence in this manner. And what are you pointing to that would make the officer's view, or what they testified that their view of the evidence was, what makes that objectively unreasonable? Why is it objectively unreasonable to... If this gentleman who has threatened the police, who says he has explosives attached to the door, who has for over several hours made specific threats to kill the officers, made threats to commit suicide by cop, and when he comes out and they have him cornered so he can't get back in towards the door, it appears from the video that he pounds on his chest and then he turns around and walks in a way that the officer is described as aggressively, but even how is it that a reasonable officer would not perceive that as imminently threatening when they're standing, he's a large man, he's intoxicated, and they're standing there with their backs to the cement stairwell?
Well, he's a fat man, that's for sure.
Well, I guess I'm not understanding. You emphasize that throughout the brief, and let me throw that in there too, because sure. I guess I'm not understanding why, to me, his large size and his intoxication may actually seem to make it more objectively reasonable that the officers were concerned. But you seem to think that that's something that would make the officers less
certainly
feel less threatened.
A reasonable officer has to observe. Okay, you said in Emmett, We rely on police officers to recognize how the circumstances are evolving and to adjust their actions to avoid unnecessary escalations of force. And then you said, and Emmett, that they had, quote, enough time to recognize and react to the changed circumstances and cease firing his gun. Now, you know, I think, Judge, the answer to your question is there was enough time, 37 seconds on the balcony, to watch Fernando walk around. You know, by the way, on the balcony, no threats, no weapon, and no aggression. Okay. He's talking to the people on the south end. He's on the north end. He walks to the south end at their command. At their command, he throws the phone to him. They had a chance to watch him, okay? And they shouldered their rifles. And so now they're down to using taser, which you've said is severe force. Has to be warned. No warning, okay? And so to answer your question, they had enough time to observe and to change their actions. And you've said, this court has said, that even a few seconds makes a difference. Does that make sense?
What part of that, your recitation of the facts there, what part of that would indicate that the officer should have known that the threats he made to commit suicide by cop were not still in play? How would they have known that?
He has no weapon.
As he is coming towards them, and their backs are to the steps.
Well, that's not quite true. If you watch the video, they walk out into the center of the landing. Okay. Then they do back up a couple or three steps.
Yeah. I did watch it. My point is why would they not still have that, those facts, you know, in their mind, and why wouldn't it be reasonable for them to assume that that was still potentially his intent?
Okay. Let's assume that that's correct. That's one view of the facts, one view of the video.
Is it a reasonable view?
I don't think so. I mean, I deposed these guys face to face for several hours. You know, I didn't believe them, but I'm not making the decision.
Yeah.
But I didn't think they were believable at all. You know, but these are heavily armed, trained individuals. You know, they've got 12 or so in each stairwell. There's no way he's going to push him down over that thing. Now, I think a reasonable jury could believe that, Your Honor. By the way, I'd like to save a couple of minutes if I can. I hate to. These are good questions, by the way, really good questions. But I'd like to save a couple of minutes. Is that possible? I've got. Okay. Thank you. I'll come back to anything after this. Thank you.
All right. Let's hear from Mr. Mortensen.
Good morning, Your Honors. If it pleases the court. My name is David Mortensen, and I am counsel for Officers Hill, Officer Olson, and West Valley City. The issue, as the court has recognized today, is whether it was objectively reasonable for Officers Hill and Olson to feel threatened and to use their tasers to subdue a large man who had threatened to kill himself, threatened to kill his family, threatened to kill the cops, threatened suicide by cop, threatened to fight the officers and to kill them, threatened to blow up his apartment, when the individual was ignored repeated instructions to get on the ground, continued to come at the officers after they had instructed him to get on the ground and was pointing a taser at them while they were on a fourth floor landing with their back to cement steps that led to a railing that fell over 3.5 stories, and where that individual was walking towards an apartment in which it's undisputed he had a high-powered rifle, ammunition, a knife, and had threatened to have explosives that he was going to use to blow up the apartment.
Counsel, may I ask a couple of questions, please?
Please, Judge.
Now, as I understand, this a lot of what you've said is absolutely accurate. But several hours into the standoff, as I understand, he told the SWAT negotiator that he would leave and so that there would be no question about it. Apparently, he was afraid he would be leaving wearing only a pair of shorts, that he would raise his arms and hands to make sure that they could see he had no weapons, he was not, so that they could see clearly that he was not having anything concealed. Obviously, he was apparently concerned. Is that correct or not correct? Just up to that point.
Your Honor, I don't remember those specific statements in the 4-hour tape. I don't dispute that at some points he made representations that if they would bring him certain drugs, that he would come out peacefully. He did say that, and I do remember those statements. I don't remember him ever saying that I'm going to come out with my hands up and that I'm going to surrender and that there's going to be no threat. I'll be wearing no clothes. I don't remember those specific statements. I'm not saying they're not in there. I just don't remember those ones, Your Honor.
Well, I'm relying on a bench memo, and maybe my clerks were being particularly creative, making stuff up for me. But they tell me that that these facts are in here, that he only would be relieved wearing only a pair of shorts. So I don't know. Maybe it's not in there. But it just seemed to me that if that were true, and then looking at the video, if in fact it is clear that he was not carrying weapons and that he was not armed, then it would seem to me that it would not be quite reasonable for an objective officer to be relying on the fact that he was armed if he was clearly not armed.
Your Honor, let me say I don't dispute what your clerks are saying. I'm sure they're doing a fine job, Your Honor. Second point, I wish I could
review every record myself, but I have them do it for me. So
I absolutely understand that. Second point, yes, Your Honor, if the entire basis for the belief of a threat in this situation was the existence of a weapon in this individual's hands, yep, and he came out without a weapon in his hands, I would agree with you that there would be no reasonable basis for a threat. That's not what the district court judge found, and that's not even what we're arguing. We're not suggesting that there was a threat based upon him having a weapon. In fact, you see the officers as they walk up the stairs with their rifles. Right. When they see no weapon, they go to taser. And the threat changes from a situation where the individual has a gun or a weapon of some kind to a situation where now your risk is a large man attacking you on a landing. And the risk becomes him getting access to your materials, your weapons, right, him fighting past you and getting back into his apartment. And those are the threats that these officers perceived. And they're the threats that, based on the undisputed facts, Judge Wadups recognized and found that it was reasonable for them to feel.
Uh-huh. So did the officers ever consider that this guy could be mentally ill and have all kinds of problems? And had they been trained with suicide types, how to deal with them?
I don't believe that there's any discussion about their training with respect to mentally incapacitated individuals in the record, Your Honor. I'm unaware of anything in the record on that. I'm also unaware of them being asked specifically whether they thought that he might be mentally deranged or have a problem. Let me say again, our belief in the threat here is not based on Mr. Coronado's mental incapacity. Rather, it's based on a 250-pound man who is threatened to kill them. And the last words he says before he leaves his apartment to the negotiator is a threat against the lives of these individuals, who has threatened to use weapons, who has threatened to blow up the building. And their risk at that point, they're trying to subdue a man, a large man who is drunk and who's not being rational, and their fear of him getting into a fight with them and the risk that they may be thrown down the stairs, over the ledge, or he might get past them back to the location where he has weapons. That's what the judge found in these circumstances. And I think that's what makes it objectively reasonable for these individuals to have felt threatened, these officers.
Did the officer that used the taser know about the threat made to the negotiator?
Both officers used tasers, Your Honor. I just want to make sure that point is clear. Both officers tased at basically the exact same moment. You hear pop, pop on the video.
Were they plugged into the conversation?
No, they were not hearing it directly. They were receiving it third hand. So the negotiator was hearing the threats from Mr. Coronado and then was relaying what he was saying to the officers. And that's in the record. You have both their deposition testimony where they say, we were getting the information third hand. and you have declarations from both of them specifically identifying the information that had been relayed to them through that third hand process. I don't think they heard the last words that Mr. Coronado said, but I think the fact that he said those words as he was leaving indicates that he wasn't going out there to surrender, and that it would be very, he wasn't walking out there to lay down because he was wearing shorts and he was going to surrender. He didn't leave his apartment as a conciliatory, I'm ready to surrender and be done. And the video makes that very, very clear. And a reasonable officer viewing that those 37 seconds would say he didn't come out and put his hands in the air. He didn't come out and get on the ground and allow us to arrest him. Instead, he came out. He walked over towards the officers on the other side as they had intended, because they wanted to get him away from the apartment where he had explosives and weapons. He slapped himself. He cursed at them. He was walking back and forth. I don't believe it. I would consider stumbling an accurate representation of what he was doing, but the video demonstrates that. He then recognizes the officers and he comes straight at them at a direction where the officers have the railing behind them. They have a cement staircase behind them, and they're in between him and the apartment where he has weapons and claims to have explosives. In that situation, Judge Waddup's determination that it was
on our observation of the video, I'm not suggesting that the arms are raised at that point, but the hands are visible. There's no arms, no weapons in them. Would you agree with me on that point?
I do agree that there does not appear from the video to be any weapons in his hands. I also would agree, just going one step beyond, that they didn't find any weapons in his hands after they subdued him. So I don't believe, and we have not argued, that he was carrying a weapon at the time when he was tased.
All right.
Let me...
I think you alternatively, I kind of want to clarify, if I understand, you're alternatively asking us to rule on qualified immunity if we disagree with you, because this was just a summary judgment motion. It wasn't a ruling on qualified immunity grounds. But I understand you briefed that below, but from the way I read the district court's opinion, it specifically said, I'm not going to rule on this because I've just granted summary judgment to the officers. If we reverse the summary judgment, can we really make that qualified immunity analysis in the first instance? Wouldn't we need to remand it for the district court to do that?
Let me start by saying that your understanding of the district court's decision is consistent with mine, Your Honor, that he did not rule on qualified immunity. I do believe this panel could rule on qualified immunity as an alternative ground, notwithstanding the fact that the judge didn't rule on it. The parties did brief it briefly. We did not put an extensive amount of briefing into it, although if this panel would like additional briefing, we would be happy to provide additional briefing. I believe this panel can and should alternatively affirm the dismissal affirm the grant of summary judgment based on qualified immunity, because there's no suggestion that the officers in this situation should have known that they could not use their tasers in that situation. There's no like 10th Circuit case. There's no like Supreme Court case. The two that are cited by Mr. Coronado and his counsel in their brief are clearly distinguishable. I don't think it would require much effort at all to look at those two cases and recognize how different the Casey case and the Kavanaugh case are from this case.
I'm just concerned that we wouldn't have the fact findings. That's the first step. The district court determines the totality of the facts, viewing them in a light most favorable to the plaintiff. And that step, at least as it's done in the summary judgment qualified immunity arena, wasn't performed here. And we'd need to know what the totality of the facts were in order to look to that clearly established prong, wouldn't we?
I believe the judge does go through and establish the facts in his opinion. And I don't believe those facts will change on a remand. I think the undisputed facts.
That's the question. Yeah.
And I believe he's reached those based on the undisputed facts. I don't believe that Judge Waddup would determine that the facts were different on qualified immunity than they were on just the typical Fourth Amendment excessive force view. So I don't think the facts will change. I can't imagine that they would be different facts for one area of the analysis, the legal analysis, and different facts for the other one. But so I would say, ultimately, this court can and should affirm on the qualified immunity grounds. But I think, like Judge Wadups and the district court, this panel need not get to that point. And I go back to the what happened, the amount of threats. These officers, it was as the district court found, it was objectively reasonable to recognize the threat that existed at that moment. When you have a large individual who is drunk, who's not acting rational, who has not listened to and complied with the requirements to get on the ground, to surrender, who then turns and walks directly at those officers and directly back to the apartment. As Judge Wadup recognized, there were two threats towards the officers at that time. First, that an objectively reasonable officer would recognize the threat of a fight. I mean, what were the officers supposed to do at this point? Are we expecting them to retreat and allow this individual to get back into his apartment where he has weapons? I don't believe that's a reasonable result. Are we allowing this individual to attack them on this balcony, on this landing? Is that the place
not so quick. We're looking for whether there's any disputed material fact. You know, was he told to come out?
He was asked to come out repeatedly over that time.
Is what he was doing, right? I mean, it could be interpreted that he was doing is following orders, come out. So he's coming out. When they say, oh, well, he's coming out and he was coming out. Well, it was a little small area and we thought he was coming at us. Well, I mean, if you were advising this guy to come out so he wouldn't be under risk of getting injured, he's a nut job, obviously. What would you tell him?
Your Honor, I would tell him.
Excuse me for calling him a nut job, but I mean, he's intoxicated. He's obviously irrational. I don't know how I can describe him without sounding, making it appear as if I'm being paternalistic towards him, but he just a little bit off, right?
He was intoxicated and not complying. That's yes, yeah. Your Honor.
So as Judge Moritz said, he was big. He could nothing he could do to control that, right?
His size was predetermined by genetics, yes, Your Honor.
Yeah, and his appetite.
Yeah. I won't disagree with you on that either. Right. Your Honor, I think the answer to your question is he could have come out and gotten on the ground and surrendered, and then there would have been no need for any type of altercation whatsoever. But that's not what he did.
Were the instructions, the officers crying out, somewhat conflicting or not?
You know, there were definitely multiple instructions, but they were all consistently of two versions. Stop, get on the ground, put your arms in the air. Those three things. That's it. He didn't do any of them, Your Honor. And in that situation, with the totality of circumstances that these officers were facing, as the district court judge found, he was a threat. And in that circumstance, it was reasonable to use a taser. And for that reason, under the totality of circumstances, I urge this court to affirm the district court. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Sykes, you had some rebuttal.
Thank you, Judge. For the conversation right before he came out, look at Defense Exhibit 5 when you can, not right now necessarily, but page 47. And you'll see, starts out on Fernando crying, "Can you hear me? Fernando, shoot me. Negotiator, no one's going to shoot you when I come out." And so he's asking, "Are you going to shoot me when I come out?" No one's going to shoot you. Are you ready to come out? And then he talks about coming out. I mean, he's asked to come out. He complies. He comes out. This issue that Mr. Mortensen brings up, you know, they were afraid. These officers are afraid that Coronado was going to get their weapons. Okay. And push them off a fourth floor. By the way, this is a switchback entrance and exit. They're nowhere. They're going down four floors, but I mean, you don't want to get pushed off a balcony. But here's the issue, Your Honors. All of these things, like you said, in both Bond and Emmett, maybe you could view the video that way. I don't think a jury would. I've tried a lot of jury cases, you know. I don't think there's a snowball's chance they're going to view it that way, but you know, could they? Yeah, they could. Okay. But what I'm saying to you is there's another way to look at it. And that's why it's a question of fact for a jury. The judge should never be deciding that kind of a situation where the facts could be viewed different ways. Okay. My client's no saint. I understand that, you know, but he didn't deserve to have his whole face bashed in, have $300,000 of medical expense. It's important that the courts, particularly in today's climate, evaluate police force and try to put a stop to improper use of police force. This was severe force. And I hope this court will take the opportunity to make a strong statement that you can't go tasing people for the reasons that this was done here. It was improper. It should never have happened. It was a travesty of justice. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel, excuse, the case is submitted. We're